Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Jerry from Wilkes-Barre, the Sunlight of the Spirit Group, 8 o'clock Wednesday night.
I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic. I'm one of those alcoholics who recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body by becoming awake to God's grace and staying awake. By being sponsorable by a man who transmitted the principles of the 12 steps into my life, by living those steps, by being committed to a home group, being available to Alcoholics Anonymous whenever they call upon me. That's why I'm here today. So, having said that, I'm glad I'm here. I haven't been here in a couple years. It's good to see everyone. I'd like to thank Jeff for asking me to come out in the group. So, this book tells me, you know, I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Then another part it tells me to use everyday language to let you know how I established my relationship with God to remove that obsession. So I'm going to throw them all together and see what comes out, as long as I can stay out of it. So, love that set-aside prayer. But, you know, I'm not from Pennsylvania. And the addicts that are here, welcome. You know, you're in the right place. I'm an addict too. So I'm from New York. I came to Pennsylvania in 1983 via the Department of Corrections and been here ever since. I come from the south side of Buffalo on the Canadian border, and I come from a good family. You know, my mother was an alcoholic, but she always did her best to take care of us. I have 9 brothers and sisters. And my father worked 2 jobs. He was a police officer. His father was a police officer. He was a hard drinker, but he always took care of us. I went to good schools. I can't blame him for anything. You know, I used to blame everybody for everything. All you guys, you know, made my life a mess. You know, Bill tells you about that. The world and its people were quite wrong. That's as far as we ever got. I had to do a 4-step to find out I was the problem. So, I was the 5th out of 9, and I went through Catholic school. You know, I did all the things. I played sports. I excelled in sports. I'm not going to say I'm a star, but I started on some teams. I played 1,000 little leagues. I remember I held a resentment from my father. He came to one little league game. I can still remember him walking behind the backstop. I can see the smoke from his palm all, and it's the only one I ever came to, and I held that resentment. But until I came to AA, and some old guy said he was too busy keeping the food on the table. 9 kids, what do you want him to do? 2 jobs. He cared so much and loved us so much, he worked 2 jobs. And, you know, the resentment just went gone. You know, so I'm terribly grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous to show me how to live today, because I didn't know how to live. You know, I thought I did, but I didn't. So, my first drink was in 1968. My first shot of dope was in 1970. And I remember me and some of my friends were standing in a circle and we were drinking Thunderbird. And I drank the whole pint, and I remember 15 minutes later, I threw up. The world was spinning. I swore I'll never do it again. But next night I did it again, and I did the same thing. But you know what? I could deal with the life. I could deal with people that night. You know, I could dance with the girls at the teen center. You know what I mean? I'd walk into the room, and I'm full of fear. I'm wondering what you're thinking about me. But I take those few drinks. I come in here, and you're damned. These people better be happy I'm here. You know, so all through, I start drinking, and I save my money all week to drink on the weekends, and that's how it started. And what it turned into when I was a senior in high school is I drank every day. I drank a no more school, no more sports, none of that, no more family. I could care less. I was always in pursuit of liquor and other substances. So I used to hang with some older gentlemen, and I hung out on the stoop on the south side, and we did what we did. You know, I was making a lot of money. I think I made more money than my father did. And I remember I did that. There was no consequences for a while. And then there was. But I remember being on that stoop and seeing other kids getting married and graduating from college. And I was still on the stoop. I'm saying, there's something wrong with this picture. People are, you know, so-and-so is going to have a baby. They're getting married, graduated from the University of Buffalo. And I'm still doing what I was doing. My sister said, you got to do, four sisters, you got to do something. So I thought a geographical change would help me. So I joined the service, joined the Army, and I went to this place called Berlin. I was over there 30 months, and I never came home on leave. Berlin's like the New York City of Europe, you know, and I was out at the clubs every night and doing what we do. You know, I found the stoop wherever I go. And the reason I didn't come home, I found this other place. I could take a duty train to Frankfurt, and from Frankfurt, I'd get anywhere in Europe in a few hours. I found this place called Amsterdam. And I never came out. All my leave was in Amsterdam. You know, I found out Heineken for a liter was only one guilder. That's 50 cents. There was a bar in every corner. I used to go with this kid, Eddie Liebel. He was German. His parents were from Berlin, and he could speak the Deutsch. And Deutsch and Dutch are close. So we could get around, and he could do all the talking. So that's where we'd go. First time there, I was there like 2 days, a 4 day pass. He said, what do you think's peculiar about this place? I said, what are you talking about? I love it. He said, no, when did you see a police officer in clothes, in a uniform? I said, I didn't. He said, because we're all undercover. Amsterdam's a major port on the North Sea, and everything in Europe comes through there. So that was my spot, but my time in the service came to an end, and I went home. And I go home. I was gone 3 years. 2 days later, I'm back on that stoop with them same guys doing what we do. Nothing changed. Nothing. So I was home about a week. My mother fell in the middle landing from the upstairs, and my sister woke me up. Said, there's something wrong with mommy. I went down there. My mother was an epileptic. She was so drunk, she didn't take her medication right. She went into seizure after seizure after seizure. So I called an ambulance, took her over to the hospital. I rode the ambulance with her, and they took a routine chest x-ray. They explained to her about her medication, but they found a tumor in her lung about the size of a baseball. She came home. She wasn't sick. I mean, she's an alcoholic, but she wasn't, like, sick. Her medication, she got that right. So she went in and, as an outpatient to have surgery, and she never woke up. And I used that for poor Jerry. I was away for 3 years. I didn't care about my other brothers and sisters that were home with her. So I went on this run of all runs. And what had happened was... through my drinking and whatever career, I accumulated some charges. And after a while, the judges, there's no more probation, there's no citations and stuff like that. So I had a little trouble in the neighborhood, and these guys called me up, we're going to go downtown and shoot pool. Do you want to go to the Hippodrome? I said, all right, pick me up. We go down there, and we pull up to this gas station. This kid, Billy Gottenberg, gets out, goes, I'll be right back. And I'm watching him. And all of a sudden, out of everywhere, police officers have guns. He's got a brown bag. What's in the bag? Well, you know what the deal is, right? 5 pounds of alcohol in other forms. And the thing is, I had a problem with a gambler in my neighborhood. And I had a .32 loaded in a holster. They had me. I mean, I was like, oh, where did they find this gun? They got me handcuffed. I'm saying, where did they search me? Man. They kicked my ass, man. Headlines where we were trying to rob the police. It wasn't that at all. But anyways, like I go in front of this judge. My father bails me out. I got to go for sentencing. He said, told me to pull up your big boy pants. I didn't want to go. And like I said, there's no more citations, there's no more probation, and there's nothing. And, you know, really, it was God's grace. And he sentenced me, and I went to this place up the line from Buffalo called Attica. That was an awakening. And I went to Attica, and what a place, man. They got lines on the floor which way you can walk. No talking in the hallways. Bells ring, go to your yard. Bells go eat. It's like bells ring, take a shower. Bells ring, get out of the shower, or go to the hall. So I went there. I was there about 7 months. And they said, well, you're young. You're not that bad. We'd like to send you somewhere else. And they sent me to another max joint in Ellenville. It's in the Catskills. And I went there. It was all guys from New York City for all those boroughs. And wild place, man. Very wild. And from there, I went to this place called Fishkill. That's right down the line. That's in the Catskills. And from there, I went home. I did all. They gave me 3 years flat. I did them all because I had a couple of write-ups along the way and went to the hole. So I get out, and 2 days later, back on the stoop again. Same stoop, man. Wow. So I'm on this stoop, and I get lit up one day, and it was a sunny day, and the sun's coming in, and going on. I said, what the hell is that? I look up. It's my two older sisters. Wow. I said, you got to go, man. You can't. You're going to go back. She goes, your brother's coming down from Pennsylvania, and we think you should go there. So my brother comes. He takes me to this place called Prosperity, PA, south side of Little Washington, right on the West Virginia border. This is what my brother does for me. He loves me, man. The goodness in this guy is unbelievable. He gives me an acre and a half of land, a trailer, a pickup truck, and a credit card, and a job. That's what he does for me. And two dogs. And it took me 20 months to burn that down. Because you know what? I do what I do. I wrecked the truck. Almost burned the trailer down. Going out, not showing up for work, doing what we do. And finally, he said, that's it, man. I can't do it anymore. And I said, well, you're my brother. You know, that didn't matter. You know, dude. You're nuts, you know. I had this obsession, physical allergy. And he thought I was, you know, that's the thing, you know. My family thought I was a mental case. Street people thought I was a whack job. And the judge said I was a sociopath. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, these guys told me, you have untreated alcoholism. We got a way to treat it with the 12 steps in God. And I'm in. I'm not a sociopath. Great. Now that whack job. I have an obsession. Great. So then, you know, I find out later I had the great obsession. Someday, somehow, I'll be able to drink a drug like all the normal people, and I pursue that to the gates of insanity and death. Is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Why am I abnormal? Because when I take the first one, I can't stop. I've lost my power of choice. You know, I had to learn that. And my brother says, you got to go. So he says, you should go back to New York. I'm not going back to New York. I'm staying right here. I hooked up with these two nursing students, two girls, and we got an apartment together. And where do I end up? Right at another stoop. Found another stoop. So anyway, I'm hanging on a stoop, and making money, but I'm using more than I'm making. I'm drinking more than I'm making. So Flag Day, 1983, I got this great idea to go in the First Federal Savings and Loan of Pittsburgh and make a withdrawal with a pistol. And so I got in and I got out. I read this book. I don't know if you ever heard of this guy, Willie the Actor Sutton. He's a bank robber. My first, when I was in Attica, there was that book, and he had this diamond stick pin. He was all trimmed up. I want to be that guy. How abnormal is that? Other people want to be students, lawyers, doctors. I want to be a bank robber. Hang on the stoop, stick up banks. Oh, wonderful. Here's my son, the bank robber. So I knew I had to beat the box. That's what happens when the alarm goes off. All the police departments make a box that you can't get out of. And I was flying down Main Street in Washington about 100 miles an hour in a stolen car I got from the airport. And I see the cops go by me. They're going, there you go. And I was like, gone. But the only thing is there were some good citizens behind me. And they saw me, what was going on, so they're chasing me. Come on. So I'm doing this 100. I know I got to make a turn up the hill. So I'm up on the brake with both feet, standing up on the brake. I get up the hill, man. I look in the rearview mirror. They went right to a storefront. So I get away for about 6 days. The only thing I didn't know is that I live next. The windows of the houses are about this far away. And I'm up there with these two girls doing what we do. You know, they wanted something. I wanted what I wanted. And there was a police officer living in the next house. He heard everything that was going on. So one Saturday night, it's like 4 a.m, I come stumbling in. And here's a cop with a folder. And I look in the apartment. I see there got to be feds, state police, township police, city police. And this guy's got my picture. He goes, is this you? Are you Gerald Fay? I said, it ain't me. I'm in the wrong apartment. Well, they had me. They cuffed me up. And here I go again. I was out of jail 20 months. But I have this obsession of the mind. And this physical allergy. And I can't stop. No matter what, I can't stop. If I run out of money, I'm getting yours. I'm guaranteed I'm getting the money. Because I don't want to be sick. And I can't stop. I'm abnormal. And so here I am, out 20 months, I go in front of this other judge, and it was a felony committed with a weapon that was loaded. So he gave me 6 to 12 years. And I did all 6. You know, I went to Pittsburgh. The wall, they called it then, not a blade of grass in the yard. It was all mud. What a zoo. What an easy place to die. And I did all that time, you know, and I'm going to change my life. I'm not coming back here. I'm not coming back. I'm guaranteeing you. So I take a few college courses. I'm not a dummy, so I went to work in the school for the teachers, teaching guys how to pass their GED. And I was, you know, tutoring them. And then I got a job as a Catholic chaplain's clerk. That's like big prestige in the joint. They gave me a pass signed by the warden. I could go anywhere I wanted to go. Kick 23, the cop would kick the door. It was beautiful. I never abused that, though. And so it comes down to when I get out, I get out. And, you know, the last few days, I went to a state halfway house. And I landed a job. I got lucky. I got in the steel workers union. You know, worked at a water treatment plant. They made me the foreman. I'm saying, stay checking no records here, man. I'm in. So, I'm doing that American dream thing, right? It's all abnormal with me, though, right, man, right? And meet a girl from Mountaintop, and we get married. I'm a church usher. I'm a union officer. I'm making like $1,000 a week. And, life is good. I have arrived, right? I have arrived, man. And the only thing is, don't take offense, ladies, I wasn't in love with that girl. And I used to wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats. And I look in her and I said, oh, what did you do? What did you do? See, I had all these nieces and nephews. I loved kids, even when I was lit up. And I was the only one out of 9 kids that wasn't married. And, you know, I wanted to have kids, and she could do it. So she gave me 3 beautiful kids, you know, and in the process of that, I just couldn't, you know, therapist gave me a way out. I went to marriage counseling. He He saw her first, then he saw me, then there was 9 sessions, like, you know, $100 an hour. And he finally comes to me and he said, "This will never work." He goes, "You're going to emotionally scar those children. They're so young." So I said, "What do I do?" He goes, "You better leave." Gotcha. So I leave, you know, I made amends to her, but I crushed her. But so I hook up with another girl. The only thing, yeah, what do you do? So I hook up with this other girl. She was beautiful. She was successful. And she had $20 million. So I thought it was a good idea. So I move in with her. She throws her husband out. And that's the only amends I got left that I know of. So, you know. So he was a 5-time Winston Cup champion, and she helped manage the team. So I really crushed. The guy had to sell his business to settle with her. So I'm living with this girl, and I'm making her neurotic. I go out, I don't come back. I'm doing all these things. She doesn't drink, smoke, nothing. And then there's me. You know, so I created my own stoop in the rec room. Had my own stoop. And I did. You should see what I had going on there, man. I was like, woo! Wow! So, you know, I'd say I'm going out, I'll be back. I'd come back like 4 days later, you know, whacked. Still whacked. And one night I said to her, I was with her 6 years. Here's the one trip, the first trip we took together. Check this out, if I could just stop drinking, I'd probably be with that girl today. This is the first trip we took together. 4 days in Las Vegas, 6 days at her condo in Newport Beach, California, 4 days on the main island, Diamond Head, then 22 days in Maui. I didn't remember a thing. My eyes were completely red. I told the lady, "Get all that vodka and shit out of there, man. In that bar, I want nothing but Jack Daniels and Dewar Scotch. That's it." That's what I did for the whole thing. I stayed lit up, man. And 6 months later, we went back, but I had to be sober. She said, "If you go back," because I couldn't remember anything about it. She'd be showing me these pictures. I don't know. I went parasailing. Wow. You know what I mean? She said, "You wanted to go skydiving too," but I said, "No way." So, anyways, you know, we make people that love us neurotic, man, the damage we do to them. And I went out one night, and I came back with her 6 days later, and she told me before I left, "If you don't come home tonight, it's over." Me, this is what I heard. "It's over, but I'll take you back." She did it 100 times. So I went out, did what I did. I came back, and she said, "It's over, man." She went to Al-Anon. They got me. So it's over. So this is where I'm at. 6 months, I went from standing in the pool at the Grand Wailea hotel and resort in Maui, drinking triple Jack and Sprite, doing what we do. 6 months later, I'm under the South Street Bridge in Wilkes-Barre drinking malt liquor. Homeless. Just burned up $20,000 she gave me as a parting gift. I burned it all up. Doing what we do. I had stoops all over the place. So that's what happened, man. And you know, I was out there for a while, but in that time, I guess it was about 90 days, I accumulated 4 open cases, all robberies, and and they kept letting me go on secured bail. "Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be back." So they finally caught up to me. Another charge dropped. They don't come get me for the robberies, but they come and get me for child support. Deadbeat dad. So they get me, and I go in front of this judge. I knew this lawyer, and he comes over to me. He goes, "Listen, I'm going to get you immediate work release in 11 and a half to 23 months. You want it? I said, I'm that guy. I'll take it, Your Honor. So open plea in the courtroom between the DA, the judge, and me, and I accept it. The only thing being, when I go back to get sentenced 30 days later, my friend the lawyer ain't there. Same judge, though. Kids for cash judge, too, and he doesn't give me that county sentence. He gives me 22 years. My knees buckle. I said, holy, that was a spiritual experience. So I had tears in my eyes, man. I can't bullshit you. I'm 22 years. I figured that was my life over. And so I go to Camp Hill, another great place. And I end up in a place called Houtsdale. It's in the middle of the state. And I knew what they did to me was wrong, and I'm not a dummy, and I know how to read. So I went to the law library every morning for 2 years, and I finally found the case, U.S. versus Santabello, exactly, by the United States Supreme Court, and that's the law of the land, man. It was exactly like my case. I said, gold, man, this is gold, dude. But I knew I couldn't do it myself. It would take years for me to do it myself. I had a life insurance policy with my union. I cashed it in. It was like 10 grand. I asked the priest there. He was the Congregation of the Holy Cross, which is a Notre Dame priest. I said, do you know an honest lawyer? Any. And he gave me this name of this guy in Wilkes-Barre who went to Notre Dame. And he's a judge today. Anyways, and I asked this nun I knew that was a missionary. And I asked her, do you know one? She gave me the same name. The priest and the nun don't know each other, and they give me the same name. I call this guy up, tells me, I give him all the money. He says, it might take a little bit, but I'll get you out. So it took, they gave me 11 to 22 years. It took 5 years, 9 months, and 28 days. And he got me out. They reversed the case. The only thing being, they told Conahan, he's in jail anyways, this judge, Kids for Cash, I go back, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, we'll sanction you if you don't give him the sentence you said you'd promise him. And that, I already had it in five times, so, you know. But I go in front of this judge, and he tells me, time served, but 1 year special probation. I said, whoa, yo, Joe, I'm not doing no I'm sick of authority. I'm sick of people telling me what to do. Bells ringing, stand up, be counted. Bells ringing, go to yard. I said, I'm done with that. He goes, shut up, man. You're getting out today. So I shut up, and I did get out that day. I was supposed to report to Luzerne County Probation the next day, and I absconded. I left. And I tell you, I don't like authority. I don't even like the mailman's uniform, truthfully. And so I hook up with another girl. So we go to West Palm Beach, and she was from Boonville, New York. I don't know if you're familiar. It's a lot of sledding up there in the winter, a lot of snow. And her father had a heart attack. We went up there, and her brothers had dairy farms, and her father had a logging company. So I went to work on a dairy farm. Man. Wow. My job was to get on a bobcat, push all the cow shit out of the barn in the morning. That was my first job. So, again, we rent a house, me and this girl. She's working in a restaurant. And one night I'm watching the Yankee game. I hear, I'm opening the door. I got a beer. You know, I'm doing what we do, right? I open the door, and there's two Oneida County sheriffs. There's a guy with the folder again. You Gerald Fahey? That ain't me, boss. Had me again. Back to Luzerne County. I got to go in front of this judge I just beat out all these years. The judge sees me come in, you know, shackled. He smiles, man. I got him. Right? This guy, all I had was failure to report to probation. He made me do the whole year. They usually give you a little slap on. No, he made me do the whole year. The only thing is I'm institutionalized. I know what to do. I get two job status. I get immediate work release. I worked at a place, make windows. During the day, I got off from there at 3 o'clock. Then I went and worked at a sports bar until 3 in the morning. So That year, I think I saved about 11 grand. It was like a record for work release. And but all that time when I was going to work, I'm saying, there's a decent stoop over there. I like what them guys are doing, you know? And so the day I maxed out, I had my buddy. I said, look, dude, come down here, pick me up at midnight. I max out. We're going to do what we do. And I said, I want a case of Labatt's and a bottle of Jack. And he had that. So I was pretty, all right. So we did what we did. Next day, I had two jobs. I quit them both. No more work for me. I got a little apartment, a little whip to get around with. Took me like 30 days to burn up all that money. And there I am again, man. And I'm like, wow. I was homeless again under that bridge. How many people have been homeless? Anybody? I was homeless 13 months. That time in the winter, living abandoned condominiums and in old warehouses with sleeping bags women made in churches. And I remember dropping out of a window at the Murray Complex in Wilkes-Barre on the boulevard, and man, my joints hurt. And I'm walking down the street, and there's a Curry Donuts. It's like 5 in the morning. And I went there. There's an outside. I had to get a cigarette, man. They had good butts. You know what I mean? That and AutoZone. They had the best butts around. I know where they're all at, man. I got it going on. You know what I mean? So I get this butt, and I light it up. I look in the mirror of Curry Donuts. I'm saying, I had a long beard, long hair, and who the hell is that guy? I don't know who that guy is, man. I don't know who he is. Where the hell? What happened? So I remember, it's just like a flashback to my childhood. And my mother was so beautiful when she was young. And I just remember her, you know. And how did I get here, man? And I said a simple prayer. Take me or do something with me. Next day, I went to rehab. It was 10 years ago. I haven't had a drink since. And it was April 2nd, 2007. And all I know is this. When I went to rehab, everything they said, I believed. They talked about these. This one tech would say, I'm happy, joyous, and free. I'm like, shut up, man. I don't want to hear that shit. I got so many. My problems piled up on me, and they became astonishingly difficult to solve, right? That's how we get here. I got so many problems, I can't solve them myself. They told me, come here. You don't have to live like you're living, and you don't have to feel like you're feeling on the inside of yourself. And, you know, I can understand that, man. You know, I love what Bob Darrell says. If you knew about me what I knew about me, you'd feel about me what I feel about me. And I felt like shit, man. So, you know what I mean? And I came in here, and the people showed me some love. I was so full of fear. And I tell you what, though, I came in here, you know, I'm a big book guy. You know, if you like the big book, you probably like me. And if you don't like the big book, I hope you still like me. But that's on you. So, you know, I found out the answers are in the directions are in this book. But the only thing I found out, I have to continue the spiritual program of action. It's not like I go through the 12 steps and it's over. You know, and that third step, I ask God, I offer myself to Him to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. That's my problem, the bondage of self. Only a good sponsor can point that stuff out to you. And so what's Bill do? So the bondage of self is going to kill me if I don't try to get selfless. So I go through these steps. What do we, bondage of self. Well, in the 10th step, Bill tells us, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, not if, when these crop up, at once we ask God to remove them. We make amends if we've harmed anyone, we talk to another human being, and we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Why do we do that? To get out of me, to help you. We seek our solution on the spiritual as well as the altruistic plane. What the hell does that mean? I seek God through the 12 steps and through you. Altruism is unselfish concern for the welfare of others. I got to help you. You know, In the back of the book, there's a thing in there, this Episcopalian pastor says, the true Christian principle is a man cannot help himself unless he helps another man first. And that's my experience with this deal. So I'm out one time at this Share a Day my buddy had in Lake Silkworth. And this guy, Tom Flynn, I don't know if he was ever here, but he was a mystical dude, man. He was mystical. And it's October and it snowed that day. Me and him are standing by the fire. I'm like 2 years sober. He says to me, this is what I want you to do, kid. I want you to ask God how you can help his kids every morning. He said, watch what happens. I'm saying, okay, I'll do it. Wow. Man. All of a sudden, I'm 2 years sober. I got six commitments on a regular basis in institutions. I didn't do regular meetings. Salvation Army, Clemmer House for Men, crossing over all institutions. And I did the homeless shelter in Scranton. I did for 2 years. And because I was homeless, why shouldn't I be there for them guys? So I do those for a couple years, all six. And then I had a commitment on Saturday morning with my own home group. And wow, man. My life, you know, I was told to let it unfold. Let God unfold. It's his schedule. He doesn't need your help. And because I was always trying to do something. Get my hands in it, right? And looking for another stoop in AA. So what happened to me was all of a sudden King's College, which is a Notre Dame priest, I go see this guy. He was a seminarian. Now he's the president of the university. And I said, you know, I got this 2-year degree. He goes, do you want to go to school again? I said, I know, but I'm 56 years old. He said, do you want to go to school again? Yeah, I said, I'd like to. He goes, go see this guy. Go see this guy. They give me a half a scholarship. So I leave there that day. I said, wow, half a scholarship. Get a bachelor's degree. I'll be all right. I wanted to be a substance abuse counselor, which I finally did do. But sometimes you got to get what you want to find out you don't want it. You know what I mean? And so they give me a scholarship, and I'm still not sold on the idea. And 2 days later, another scholarship came for $1,500 more a semester. I said, okay, I'm going. I'm going now. That's like God saying, what do you want me to do? Take you to school by the hand? So I go, I graduate, and, you know, I worked at a counselor in a couple of places. I worked at, it's just not for me. You know, I respect what counselors do. But it's not for me. Authority. I don't like them telling me how to do this shit. You know what I'm saying? I've been with the newcomer since day one in this deal. I know how to deal with them. You know what I mean? And it ain't pretty sometimes. Anyways, my first time I gave a lecture at this place called Choices, I threw two guys out. Get out. You're disruptive, get out. I had to go back and apologize to them guys. Because Dave wanted the money for the bed. It's a money game, really. Some people get helped. I couldn't do it, though. So, what am I going to do? So, I'll open a sober house. Bought this house. You know, that's funny. I was homeless. I went through some, I saved money up. I was making good money. A jail guard gave me a union card when I got a jail letter. A union card. I was making $28 an hour, and I went from making $7 bagging cups at Maui Cup when I first got out of jail to this deal, third trip into the joint. So life is good, you know, so I go to this tax sales, I buy my own house, because I never had a house. I'm trying to sell that, and I didn't want it anymore. I'm just saying. You know, it's a lot of work. I'm never home. So I get this sober house. And my spiritual advisor, she's an 84-year-old Mercy nun. She can speak Spanish. She was in El Salvador when it was hot. she tells me I listen. She has never been wrong. Anytime I go to her, whatever she tells me, I just do it. I know it's platinum. Okay, a little some humility here, but I'm doing it. And she tells me, I think your calling is to have sober houses. You can help them guys like that. So I'm like, wow, man. The one sober house was a thorn in my ass. You know what I mean? You know, you try it sometime, you know. So I had one, and, you know, I asked God to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Now I got five. And today was a day from hell. Newcomers, self-will run riot, but they usually don't think so. So I prayed all the way down and try to get out of the way now. So I got these houses, and I'm opening another one Wednesday. And if I'm giving them my life and my will, I have to do it. I'm serving. I'm here to serve. I'm not here to count money. You know, I got 26 beds, and half of them came in with no money. And I just show them what was shown to me. I try to get them into this big book. I try to get them committed to a home group, sponsored, and things get better. And if not, they leave. I make sure of it. Because this book tells me, don't waste time on a man that doesn't want your help. It tells me in this book, we get jobs from people. I do that. Give them a place to stay. I do that. But if they're not willing, honest, and open-minded, which are the essentials, which are indispensable, I don't have time. Too many guys are calling me for help. Too many guys, man. It's just all unbelievable. There's an opiate epidemic out there. People are dying. And so, you know, I interview them. Go to AA every day, get sponsored, get a home group, get committed to that home group, go to work every day, do a chore, and obey the rules. Will you do that? Yes, sir. Sure will. Well, one went out the door today because he didn't want to do none of it. He wanted to stay in bed all day or whatever he wanted to do. So I'm not going to waste time. I'm here to help if you want it. So so that's where I ended up with this deal, man. You know, and I'll tell you today, I have a life that's just banging off the chain, man. I mean, I finally went skydiving in sobriety. You know, scuba diving, went to the Cayman Islands for a conference, sat with Bob Dylan and had lunch. He got pissed off at me. He got pissed off at Jimmy once, too, so. So, you know, I get to do these incredible things in AA, man. And I left a flyer out there for the Keystone Conference at my church we're going to have in May. So, you know, we'd love to see you down there. So you can check that out. So, sponsor guys, I'm committed to a home group. I'm doing what this book tells me to do. Unity Recovery and Service. And, you know, in the beginning, man, I'm telling you, I go to the room and it'd be about gratitude. I'd be grateful. I had a pleasant feeling, right? But when I left the meeting, an hour later, I hated every one of you again. I was angry, man. And but they had me say, I'm telling you, I was saying, meeting makers make it. If you're there for the right reason, come to offer a solution from this book. And these guys are telling me, well, in that book, it says we only know a little. That's like on page 164, right? So he goes, this is a disease of feelings of guilt and shame. So really? Sounds good. Let me ask you something. So you only drank when you're full of guilt and shame, yeah? How about when you're having a great day? You drink then? Oh, you did. So it's not a disease of feelings. It's a spiritual malady. It's not a disease of feelings. It's a spiritual malady, man. And once I get to a point of I'm a real alcoholic, I can't stop. So the only thing this book says is we offer 100% abstinence. And, you know, I leave these meetings and I feel like shit about an hour later because I wasn't doing nothing. I didn't have nothing to give away. I made the coffee. Yeah, sure, we got to do that stuff because it was made for us. But I wasn't trying to help anybody. I was out of my mind. And remember sitting in Kirby Park with this book And I was reading the 12-step prayer. I still remember. You're a new man, must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we see the things we place in God's hands. We're far better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you'll presently live in a new and wonderful world. Bam! I want that. I want a new and wonderful world, because I was in a sober house and it sucked. These guys look at me and they're saying, what do you got there? It's a big book. They said, what step are you? Well, I did the first three steps months ago in rehab. Well, what are you doing today? I'm reading this. He goes, you're in the largest 12-step spiritual program in the world, and you're not working a step. What are you doing here? So I started hanging out with these guys, and then I go through all of those steps in a couple days, and the noise goes down in my head. And I start getting in the middle of these guys, and they got me right into service, doing all sorts of commitments with my home group. Whatever they wanted me to do, I would do. Because I know when I was with you guys, we hang together, I get to die alone. So I hung out with you guys, the fellowship is the foundation of recovery, but that in itself isn't enough. But you guys showed me how to build a relationship with God. I had no idea. I was restless, irritable, and discontent before I ever took the first drink. Before I took the first drink, man, there was something wrong with me. And then, you know, I'm going along and I'm like, I've had a pretty good life, man, along the way. And I kept stepping all over it. And he pointed some things out in the book to me that if 100 experiences show that the first drink leads to another debacle of all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why does he take that first one? Why do I take the first one? After time, I burn my life to the ground. Why? Bill tells you. That someday, somehow, you'll be able to drink and drug like other normal people. You pursue that to the gates of insanity and death. It's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. That's why. I'm a real alcoholic. I can't take nothing. Nothing. I have to stay spiritually fit. That's why I'm here today. This is part of my spiritual condition, coming down here and being available in AA. So what's the most important thing to me is continue. Continue. Continue the spiritual program in action. In the 10th step, in that paragraph, it's not that big. They talk about continue four times. He talks about continue more than he does honesty. He says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. He tells you this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. A lifetime, man. I got to do this thing to stay right. And guess then it becomes a way of life. It has for me. And it can help it happen for you. But it's not a program of sitting on my ass. It's a program of moving my feet. If I'm talking about it, I better be about it. And then it says, we've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in effectiveness and understanding. So if I want to stay in this world of the spirit, I better be doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm going to be back on the stoop, right? Huh? Handcuff. I tell them now. They go by. I was going to say, handcuff me now. Save the time. Forget that, fool. It's me. So that's where I'm at today. Trust God, clean house, and help others. But that one page, 164, used to be my favorite page. You know, we only know a little. God disclosed more to you and us asking your morning meditation. What you can do, say a 12-step prayer in your morning meditation. So, but this is my favorite page now. I'm going to break it down. Like, I didn't know what the hell it. I was reading a spiritual book with an alcoholic mind. I needed a spiritual man who was transmitting those principles to break this book down to me. So, here we go. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any form of intellectual pride which keeps you from what's accepting, what's in this book, Bob? I feel sorry for you. If you still think you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that's your affair. We don't push pride, reform, or evangelize. We simply lay that spiritual kid at your feet. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking for good and all, that's forever. It ain't one day at a time. I quit forever. I live life one day at a time. And sincerely feel that you must have some help. We know we have an answer for you. We know It never fails. I got to have this, never fails. Follow the direction. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal, you're in the habit of showing when you were trying to get another drink. Now I'm like reading this, I'm saying, this guy's overconfident, or he's arrogant, or it never fails. I'm like, right? So I'm thinking it's unrighteous. But the last sentence makes it righteous. This whole paragraph was about God's grace and his love and his goodness. Because the last sentence says, your heavenly Father will never let you down. It was all about God. Thanks for listening.